Hey there, welcome to this week's message from Real Life Ministries. We are so glad that you're here. We hope that this message will encourage and inspire you to walk closer with Jesus. Now sit back, relax, and let's dive into the Word together.
We're looking at the instances of where Jesus makes claims that he is the great I am. And so our first week, just as a setup for our message for today, a little bit of a reminder. Again, you can watch all of our services that are online. They'll be up there the week of, and so you can check out every single one up to this point. But as we started off this series, we talked about the story of Moses, to where God showed up in a story and revealed who he is to Moses, saying that he is that he is. He is God. He is the only thing that always is, and he is that he is, and the great I am is the story that we see there. We see that Moses' response to that is what our response should be, which is, what does that mean for me? In light of who God is, who am I? What do I do with this reality of who God is? And we see that Moses chose to trust and believe, that he allowed God to use him in ways that he wasn't sure, maybe like us. And that God is creator. He's the one that has put all things into practice. He always is. He's always there. Father Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That God is who we're introduced to in Genesis. And then we started off this series by saying, when Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, comes onto the scene in history, that he says, that God, that one that is, that always has been, the creator of all things, the one that holds all things together, I am he. That's what Jesus says. He says, I am that I am. Now, contextually in the culture, when that statement was made, is very polarizing, because there's people that believed in who this God was, this Yahweh, Jehovah God, and then there were those that didn't. And the ones that did believe, they believed what they believed about him. And one of the things that they believed about him is that there were no other gods besides him. So when Jesus comes on the scene and says, hey, I'm that God, how do they respond? You can't do that. No, you're not. There's only one God. And so in the context of Jesus sharing who he is and how he is and why he is, that's kind of the climate of which they're receiving that message. And so in an interestingly similar way, maybe that's the climate that you hear today. What do you believe about God? Are you a believer in God, but you believe in the God in the only way that you know how? And maybe today you'll hear a little bit different about who he is. Maybe today you're not sure who God is to you. And you get to hear the same words that Jesus used to people that didn't believe then for you today. And maybe today's the day where you make that decision to choose to believe or not. And so we started to walk through those. Week one after that, we talked about how Jesus makes a multitude of statements that he is the bread of life, saying that he is to be that which we are sustained by. Not the world, not our jobs, not money, not selfishness, not our feelings, but that we live not only on bread alone, but by the word of God. Jesus goes on and he says that he is the light in the darkness, that he is truth, that he is to be our way, he is to be our guide as we go through life, to help us understand what's good and what's not, and who we are and who we aren't. And he moves forward through and he says that he is also the good shepherd, that he is the door, he's the pathway. And then this week, we get to talk about how Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Resurrection and the life. And this is going to be like a two-part message, just because I'm going to make it two parts. So the second part's going to be next week, and it is that. So this week is resurrection and the life. We're going to talk a little bit about what this life is. But next week, we're going to talk about when Jesus says he's the way, the truth, and the life. So we're going to put those two things together. And so if you're like, I want to know more about the life, got to come back next week. Got to come back next week. And I hope that you're compelled to do so because of how amazing this message is because of what God says in it. So we're going to talk about the resurrection and the life. We're going to do a couple things today. Number one, we're going to do a couple definitions. I'm going to make a very black and white statement. And then we're going to talk about what that statement means for you. Okay? I'm going to make a statement. It's going to be pretty black and white. It's going to be pretty objective. I think most people are going to go, okay, and then we're going to say, what does that mean? What does that mean for you? when we talk about Jesus' statement here. A couple definitions before we dive in to the resurrection and the life. First of all, resurrection, the Greek word is anastasis in the Greek, which is the word that's used when Jesus is saying it, right? It's also a similar word in the Old Testament Greek that is life. But when he talks about resurrection, it is to stand up again, to rise up or to stand up again. What does the word again insinuate? Again, right? Yep. It means that it's not the first time, but it has to be again, a second time. So the word to rise up again makes the notion that you had to have either fallen in order to rise again. Okay, the definition in the Greek is twofold. It's both and. And if you're like me, sometimes I don't like that. Sorry. It's both and. And here's what it's both and. Number one, it yes means to rise again objectively from death to life. Dead, alive. That's what the word resurrection means. It also is an analogy and a metaphor for something that has been put to death that is now alive again, spiritually, emotionally, the way that you live, the life that you have, which is why Jesus dovetails these two things together. And so when you hear the word resurrection, you can see and hear both and or either. He's talking about a physically dead person from dead to life, or he's talking about something, a feeling, a notion, a belief, a desire, the way that you think, your logic, whatever that may be, something that is now no longer, it's been put to death, it's dead, and now has changed, and now something that is new and different. And in that process, Jesus calls that life. Does that make sense? So here's the objective statement for today. Jesus, multiple times in the New Testament and in this context, says that he is the resurrection. And what he's saying is that when everybody, spoiler alert, everyone dies. Right? Anybody not die? Do you know of? Everybody dies. So when everyone dies, he says that there is a resurrection from death to life. He's going to talk about that. He's also saying that there are things that die in our lives that are brought back to life. So when Jesus says he is the resurrection and life, he's again referring, which he's done multiple times throughout this series, that not only is he the way in which that happens, he's the means in which that happens, but he also is that. He embodies that. So this is a gospel message that every person dies and that there is the ability to have life after death, and it's only through Jesus. Now, here's what I want to do today. Because of the context of the story, I just love this story so much. This is the story of Lazarus, John chapter 11. And because it's a two-part message today, we're going to read John chapter 11, verse 1 through 45. 45? I don't even read an 8-word text message. How are we going to read 45? You can do it. We're going to do it together. Here's why this is important to me. The context always matters. And read the fullness of the context and understand more about how Jesus is resurrection and life. How he is. What that means. We've already said the what. We're going to talk about how it is. Why it is. What does that mean? And so I want you to think for a second as an example of the idea of gravity. Who believes that gravity is a real thing? Okay. Do you live your life based on that truth? Yes or no? Think about it. Hopefully the answer is yes. You can't jump off a building and have gravity not be a thing. Okay. Some of us like to think we're uber super strong. And we're like, I could lift 1,000,000,000,000 pounds. Like, you can't, because gravity's a thing, right? Some of you are like, yes, I can. Nope, not the point. Okay, you live your life based on the reality of that objective statement. We live in gravity. Yeah. Well, do you live according to it? Well, let me think about that. Do I pay attention to gravity? Does it impact me? Is there things I have to do and not? Yes, 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 yes. Well, here's the invitation for today. Is that when I say, do you believe that resurrection is through Jesus a real thing? Maybe if you're like, yeah. My question now is, how do you live because of it? What do you believe because of that? What do you believe about what Jesus says about that? What does he say about it? Ooh, at least 45 verses of unbelievable truth that we get to see about how this matters for us. And we just get to walk through it, and the invitation is always there for you to say, what do I do with this? What do I actually believe about death, life, resurrection, both real death and life, and death and life from things in me that maybe God's wanting to do? What does he say about it? What does he teach us about it? What are there things that I'm missing about it? What am I grasping? How now am I living in light of this truth? That's the invitation for today. You in for that? Yes, okay. So John chapter 11, we're gonna go through the whole thing. I'm gonna read it and then we're gonna go back and break it apart. Here's my hope for us today, is you'd be willing to listen to this story as it unfolds and have a piece of it or maybe all of it speak truth to you today. You'd be willing to have an open heart and a mind to see what God's word says as it's in its entirety together. And then yes, we'll go back and we're gonna make some observations of the text, because I believe that God speaks truth to us in ways that only he can through his spirit and through his word. And it's not always the exact same thing for every person at the same time. But what I do believe is that God's word never returns void, that it will do what he intends it to do if we do the work of putting on ears to hear it and eyes to see it today. Okay, John chapter 11, starting in verse 1 through 45, this is where Jesus makes the claim he is resurrection and life. This is a story of Lazarus. Here we go. John chapter 11, verse 1 says, now a man, I'm gonna read it straight out of this. I'm reading out of the NIV. This is the Bible that I have here. If you have yours, follow along. It will be on the screen, but I'm gonna read all the way through it. Verse 1, it says, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Now this Mary, whose brother was Lazarus, who lay sick, was the same one who poured out perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one whom you love is sick. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's son may be glorified through it. Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus, and so Mary and Martha and Lazarus. It says, yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. So then he heard his disciples, said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. But Rabbi, they said, a little while ago, the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you're gonna go back there? And Jesus' answer was, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees this world's light. Then he walks by the night, and then he stumbles, for he has no light. It's an amazing parable. We're not talking about that today, but it's super good. Moving on. So he says, after he had said that to them, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. He says, but I'm going there to wake him up. So the disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, won't he just get better? Won't he just wake up? And Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought that he was speaking of just natural sleep. And so then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Then Thomas, called Didymus, which means twin, said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. And so on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. 4 days. Now, Bethany was just 2 miles away from Jerusalem, and many of the Jews that had heard that Mary and Martha were there to comfort the loss of their brother, and they went with him. It says, when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Martha said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now that you will get, or that God will give you everything in which you ask. So Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. And he who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Martha said, yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary. She said, Mary, the teacher is here and he's asking for you. And so when Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to meet him. And Jesus had not entered the village yet, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had seen Mary in the house and comforting her, notice how quickly she got up. They followed her because they figured that she was going to mourn Lazarus. When Mary had reached the place where Jesus had seen him and she saw and fell at his feet, she said again, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews had come along with her, also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And he asked, "Where have you laid him?" "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. It says, then the Jews said, "How he loved him." But some of them said, could not the one who have opened the eyes of a blind man have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was in a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. He said, "Take the stone away." "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of a dead man, "by this time there was a bad odor, for he has been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took the stone away. Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you have always heard me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Go take the grave clothes off and let him go." And finally, in verse 45, it says, "There are many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary, had seen what Jesus did, put their faith in him." That is our story that we get to talk about today. Man, so much in there. So much in there, so much in there. So many details, so many things said. We get to look at it. We're going to pull it apart. And again, here's my hope for today is that as we look at it, it would help us better understand what is it that Jesus is saying about death and about life and about who he is and about how he is and what he does and doesn't do and where he is and where he isn't. All to help us understand that supporting statement that he is life, that he is resurrection, that there will be resurrection. And how do we handle this idea of life and death in Jesus? So we get to look at it. If you have your notes there, there's some observations. There's only 16. Just 16 observations that we get to look at. There's probably way more. But how we look at it, we're going to do that together. Number one, we're going to look at verse 4. Verse 4, again, be asking ourselves the question, what do I believe about this? And how has this played out in my story? Verse 4, we see that after the sisters went to Jesus and said, "The one that you love is sick." Jesus replies, he says, "When he heard this, this sickness will not end in death." Okay, hold on. That doesn't make any sense. Little encouragement here. Anytime, every time, you're reading the Word of God and you read through something and you're like, "Hey, that seems a little bit off. I'm not really sure what that means." Don't move ahead. Don't brush through it. Don't keep flipping. Don't just keep going. Think about it and go, what does that mean? Ask questions, dig, seek to understand, because it's in the nuance, just like in life, just like in relationship, just like in love. It's the nuance and the details that actually make the statement matter, okay? Don't cruise through it. Ask. So Jesus says, Lazarus is sick and he's not gonna die. Was he lying? Did Lazarus die? Yes. So Jesus lying to the disciples. He's like, "Hey, he's not gonna die." Well, what does he mean? That's a conundrum. We should ask that question. I don't know. He says he's not gonna lead to death, but it's for God's glory that the Son of God would be glorified. So you gotta ask yourself, what is Jesus trying to say here? I'm not gonna give you the specific answer, but I think a thought that would be interesting here is, as Jesus speaks in parables and in analogies, he's telling them that what's gonna happen is not gonna result in death, but it does. Now, as he goes through, he's gonna say that he's asleep, right? What happens for the most of us all the time? After you go to sleep, the next day you what? Lord willing, you wake up. And so I think it's interesting that Jesus says, "Hey, he's not gonna die, but he did die." And so I think that it could be potentially seen that in the very beginning of this, Jesus is starting to set the stage by how he's talking to them, is that what is gonna happen is not gonna be something that's gonna actually be the thing that you think is gonna happen. Because up to this point, every single person after they die, they stay dead. True? Now, Jesus is going to do something new, but right now he says, hey, this is not going to result in death, but it did. But I believe that he's starting to pave the way to say, there's more to it than what you've always thought that there's ever been. He's starting to build the foundation for life always, eternal, a resurrection. He's starting to help them understand, what do they believe about death? What do they do with death? How should we look at death? God, what are you starting to show us? What does that mean? Should be the questions that we start to ask. I just think it's super interesting that Jesus makes that statement. He's not going to die. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But what does that mean for us? So he's starting to let us know that there's more than maybe what we see that it is. Super important. This is going to come back. Verse 5. It says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Jesus loved Martha, loved Mary, loved Lazarus. When the message got to Jesus, he said, the one that you love is sick. The one that you love. You love, you love, you love. Does God love Mary? Yes. Does God love Martha? Yes. Does God love Lazarus? Yes. Jesus says that. He does, he does, he does. Does God love you? Yes. Yes. And in his love, because that's true, said multiple times, guess what God does because of that in this story? Well, what does he do? Because he loves them, it says, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed there for 2 more days. Stayed there for 2 more days. Okay, hold on. Again, digging it. God says, because I love him, I'm not going. Because I love you, I'm staying here for 2 more days. He's sick. It's not good. What do you do? I'm staying. Do you see that? Anybody have any tension with that? If you're like me, I'm like, well, God, if you, I'm gonna get way ahead of myself. There's no order in these observations, right? God, if you love me, well, then you come right now. Like, you come yesterday. Like, in fact, if you already knew this, like, you would have already been there. It says, because Jesus loved them. He loved them, he loved them, he loved them. So when he heard, he stayed for 2 more days. As we process this for our own life, now we're starting to unravel, who is this God and what does life mean and what does life from death mean and what does that look like? And so we see that because God loves, he didn't go. He did stay, which means exactly what he wanted to happen is going to happen in the way that he wants it to happen. In the journey that he wants it to happen, to the people that he wants it to happen with each other as it goes. And that is how God loves, is because of how these things happen. It's going to continue to build. The next observation, he finishes verse 4. He says, the sickness will not end in death. Yes, it did. And then he says, no, it's for God's glory so that God's son may be glorified through this. Who's this story about? Lazarus, 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 Lazarus. No, Mary, Mary, Mary. No, Martha, Martha, all of them. No, wait, it's the Jews. Wait, no. Who's the story intended to be about? Jesus. He says, because he loves, which is right after this, he said, it's not going to end in death, but what is going to happen is going to be so that God is glorified, and that so the Son of God is the one that is glorified also. And we're going to see that it's so that people will believe. When you think about the circumstances in your own life, maybe like this, maybe exactly like this in death, is the story about God being glorified? Is the story about who God is and how he works? Is the story about other people seeing and learning and believing? Or is it just about Lazarus? That's the question we ask. Verse 15 and 42, again, it says so that we may believe. Verse 16, this is actually funny. This is intended to be funny here. So again, John says, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed for 2 more days. He said, for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe. He says, but let us go to him. And then verse 16 says, then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, let us also go so that we may die with him. What does that mean? What does that mean? So when he said, hey, let's go back to Judea, what did the disciples say to Jesus? You can't go back there, They just tried to kill you there. And so when Jesus says, hey, we got to go see Lazarus because he's actually dead. He is actually dead. Thomas goes, well, fine. So they're going to kill us too. We're not going to go back there. Right? Why are we doing that for? And Thomas, and this is why I make this observation, man is so much like me. Because God has a plan. God is sharing what he wants them to see. God is saying things like, this isn't going to end the way you think it is. He's saying, I'm staying longer for a reason. Will you see it? Will you trust me that I'm going when I want to go, that I'm doing that I want to do, that it is going to be good, that it is going to glorify God, that there will be faith and belief, that I do love in the midst of all of it? Will you see and will you go with me? And Thomas is like, no, because they're just going to kill us. Man, that's like me sometimes. God is giving the invitation. He's offering. He's sharing. He's trying to teach. We just blow right through it. I blow right through it. And I go, God, I know what you're doing. And I know how this is going to go. If I go there, here's exactly what's going to happen. So why would we follow you and what you're doing? Because all they're going to do is going to kill us. Right? And so Thomas has this little kind of jab comment. Like, we're just going to go. They're going to kill us too, Jesus. Now let's make it practical for a second. Now, how many opportunities are there in your life when through God's word or through other people, you're invited to trust him to go into something that you think you already know how it's going to go? Well, I'm not going to talk to them. I know exactly what they're going to say. Well, I'm not going to go learn how to, you know, be a disciple and be discipled because I know exactly how that's going to go. I'm not going to be in relationship and I'm not going to trust God's word and I'm not going to let, because here's exactly what we're going to do. I'm going to fail again and they're going to judge me again and I'm not going to be good enough again and they're going to fail and I'm going to fail. And so, yeah, okay, yeah, let's just go do that, God. You got to love it. It's just real. So Thomas, in the very middle of what God is trying to do, an unbelievable thing, trying to help them see what life actually is, what bringing life to death is, him revealing who he is. Thomas can be like me and I can be like Thomas, and I'll just wager to say, potentially you, that we miss it. We miss it, we miss it, we miss it. Do you miss it? Are the things that God is showing that you've already predetermined? I get encouraged by this because I'm like Thomas sometimes. Here's what Jesus doesn't do. He doesn't go, Thomas, beat it. You miss it. Now, some of us need to hear this today, because that's what you think. I always miss it. I don't ever see it. So God quit on me. God's kicking me to the side. I failed. All this stuff. Jesus doesn't do that in the story. He doesn't do that here. He's like, come on, let's keep going. Next observation, it's six on the list here, is the responses of Mary and Martha. Both of them. It's very interesting. Anytime you see repetition in the Bible, have that be a clue that God is wanting you to catch something. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it again. So when Martha runs out to Jesus, what's the very first thing she says to him? She says this in verse 21. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Mary runs out, she says the very exact same thing. Lord, if you have been here, my brother would not have died. Have you ever had a situation in your life, maybe it's exactly this, where somebody has died, or something bad has happened, where there's been tragedy or loss or difficulty or struggle, broken relationship, lost job, lost health? Even in this example, maybe it's death. And the immediate thing that comes to your mind when you have an engagement with God is, God, if you would have been here, this would not have happened. We've all been there, sometimes multiple times, maybe right there today. But the immediate response from both of them is, God, we've surveyed the scene, and death is the end of everything. It's over. But God, if you'd have been here, you'd have changed it. I guess the question is, did Jesus know what was happening? Yes. Was Jesus running a plan that was good? Did he love Martha and Mary and Lazarus? Yes. So was God actually there? I would say yes. Now the question for you this morning is, through the events that you've been in or maybe you're going through, is God actually there? Was he actually there? Was the circumstances of the situation, the ones you've been through or the one you're going through, can you look upon it like they're looking upon it? Even in the middle of the time where you're like, God, if you would have, this wouldn't have happened. Would we be a people in the text now that we get to look on it because we're not in it? Would we be people that go, wait, no, he is there. He was there. He has a plan of what's happening. He does love me. He does say that this is going to bring truth so that people will see, that people will believe, that they will put their trust in God, not in the absence of difficulty, not in the absence of tragedy, not in the weird circumstances that I don't understand, that I don't see, that he does, that he did, that there's more to it that I haven't seen, that I don't understand, because that's what he's revealing in the story, where both of them, the immediate response, which I think ours is often, is, God, if you're here, where are you? This would never have happened. You could have stopped it. You could have saved it. And in the reality of this text and in this story and multiple other ones is that God is and was there and is in control and does have a plan. The question is, would we choose to see it for that? Or are we going to be like Thomas and go, I already know why and how and what? The invitation is that God shows us what life actually is and what he does in the midst of loss and death, both physically and in the emotions and in the faithfulness and the belief of our lives. They both say, God, you could have stopped it, but he has a plan, and it's for people to have faith and believe. Would we trust in that? Verse 25, this comes after that statement. It says, if you had been here, I'm reading 21, if you'd have been here, we'd not have died. This is Martha. She said, I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said, yes, I know he will at the end. There will be a resurrection. It's at the end. And Jesus makes the claim. He says, I am the resurrection and I am the life. The one who believes in me will live. And even though they die, whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And he asks Martha and you the question, do you believe this? Do you believe this? Now, how did Martha feel in that moment, at that time? What do you think that your visceral response would be? The moments that you sit in that, mine is, I don't. I don't believe that. Because if you would have done something different, then maybe. If you'd have saved him, then maybe. But it's a really awkward question because death and resurrection means that it has to die before it comes to life, right? So in that moment, the faith and the trust in God in being something that brings life from death can only come after death has occurred. And so as Jesus is there, he asks her the question before he's even done it. You see that? He says, I'm the resurrection and the life. Do you believe this? Hasn't happened yet. Hasn't raised Lazarus yet. He has not been resurrected yet. That part of the story has not happened. And so he asks us the question, before we see what he's going to do, will you believe and have faith? And we see that Martha's response is yes, I do believe. I believe you're the Son of God. I believe that you're the one has been sent. Man, that's a tough declaration, is it not? Jesus offers us that same invitation. On the precipice of death, when it looks like it's over and all the things are bad and God wasn't there, and he could have done it differently. And maybe he's working a plan and maybe he's not. He makes the statement that says, I'm in control of life and death, the life that comes after death. I'm the life that is life when you have life. I will bring life out of the things that die in your life. This is who I am. Will you trust me? I'm working a plan. Do you believe this? Is the same question that we get to ask ourselves every day and in every context. We can take it from Martha where she says, yes, I do believe that. And we can't read into exactly how she is, but man, I gotta feel like that's a yes, yes. I do believe it, but come on. Like, help me understand. Like, why weren't you here? Like, why did you wait? Like, why did you let this happen? I know you love me. Like, I know you love Lazarus, but like, I don't understand. We don't understand sometimes, but the question still remains. Do you believe that God is in control of all of it? That he can bring life out of death? That there is more that he offers than this physical life right here, right now? The question is, do you believe that? And my follow-up question is, do you live like it? Because that's the question for them as well. So he says, do you believe? Next one is my favorite one of this entire story. Favorite one of this entire story. She says, yes. Martha says, I know he'll rise again. Jesus goes on to say that Whoever believes in me will never die. He says, do you believe this? She says, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah. Verse 32 says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was, she fell at his feet. She asked the exact same question. Starting in verse 33, says, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her were also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. He was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And he asks a question. He says, where have you laid him? Come and see, Lord, they replied. Verse 35, very famous verse, shortest verse in the Bible. John chapter 11, verse 35 says what? Jesus wept. Don't miss this morning. Why? Think about it. Why would he cry? What's he about to do? He's gonna bring back to life, right? Like, we know the story. We can see it after there. Does God know that he's gonna bring Lazarus back to life from death? Does he already know that? Has he already said that? Has he already told the disciples that? Did he already say that he's the resurrection and the life? Did he already say that, like, he knows that that's gonna happen? Would you agree? So then why does he care? Why doesn't he be the version which a lot of people like to make him be, that's like, I'm Jesus and don't ever be sad. Don't ever worry and don't ever grieve. Because guess what? I bring life and things are good. He doesn't do that. What's he do? He weeps. Why? Because even in the middle of the circumstances where he knows that he brings life, that he will have more than what this life brings, that he is gonna do above and beyond and more than we can ever hope and imagine, he still knows that in the middle of that, that is brutal. That somebody is dead, that there is loss, that there is doubt, that there is pain and frustration, that in the middle of it, they've said, God, you love, but I don't understand. Help me understand. And when he sees them, when he sees you in the middle of that, he weeps because he knows how hard it is. And he knows how tough it is to have faith. And he knows how difficult it is to trust when we don't understand. He knows that when we lean into that, this right here, right now, this temporal physical life consumes us and we think that's all there is and it's never gonna get better, that he says, I see you. I know how that feels. You're weeping and they're weeping and family together, and I sit and I weep with you. That's who God is. And man, that makes a difference on what he says, what life is and it isn't, and what bringing life from death is. You cannot have resurrection without death. And Jesus knows what it means for death to happen. He's gonna go show us that he knows himself. That hasn't even happened yet. He hasn't even brought Lazarus back from the dead yet. But he sits right there with you and with us. And he weeps with us when it's hard and when it's difficult. And when that question that we still know, do you believe, is really there. God knows how hard that is for us to go, yes, but I don't understand. It's loss, it's hard. And Jesus says, in that, I am the only thing that will bring you life in it. Both in this example where he's gonna physically do a miracle and raise a person back to life from death to show that he's God, so that people will what? That they will believe. Through tragedy, truth is put on display. But at the same time, in the hearts of people, in you, in me, in this community, and in your family, we have the opportunity, should we choose to see it, that our heart and our desire and our life can be brought back to life when it's broken, when there's death, when it's dead and it's gone, that Jesus says, I still invite you to trust me. In that, I can be that for you, and I weep with you because it's hard. And it's painful and it's difficult. And what he's trying to tell us in this story and in the whole book is that this is happening so that you will have faith and believe. Not in the absence of it. Man, I'm like Mary and Martha. I'm like, God, if you'd have been here, and God, if it had been different, and if you really would have loved, you'd have stopped that and you'd have started this and you'd have given me that and you'd have stopped them from doing that and you wouldn't have let me do this. And God, if you'd have just done it that way, then I would believe. No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. Because I haven't seen it. I didn't go through it. I haven't been raised to life from it. There's a whole bunch of things that I wish I wouldn't have done. But without doing what I did and thinking what I thought, I wouldn't have been able to taste and feel what death is inside. Now, for some of us, this hits home because a physical death has happened in your life. And you read that story and you go, man, that's exactly where I was. Today, would you see that God grieves with you? Some of us, it's just the emotional part. It's the belief part to where like, man, I'm broken inside and I'm dead. And God's like, will you trust me? Will you trust me? Will you trust me? Because when you do, you will see what life actually is from death, not in the absence of it. Man, we don't have as much time as I want us to have. That's only halfway through our observation. That's like 7 observations. I hope that even in this message, you're like, my goodness, the word of life is in this book. Would you slow down to peel it apart? Would you see yourself in it? Because that's where life comes from. The words of life, the way, the truth, and next week, the life is what Jesus offers. But we have to be a people that fight against the Thomas in us to go, I already know. I already know what you did. I already know what you're gonna do. I already know what you're not gonna do. And we're gonna see that at least in this last example or two, that is part of it as well. As we round it out, people ask, could this have been avoided? Maybe. Is it about avoiding it? I hope that you see it's not. Life and death will happen. Ups and downs will happen. It's when they happen that Jesus offers for us to trust and believe that he would be put on display, that in our faithfulness, when it's hard and difficult, that other people is what Jesus said would see and believe. Verse 36, it said that he loved. I'm sorry, I gotta do this one. Verse 36 says that Jesus wept, right? Right after he wept. Gosh. People see Jesus weeping, okay? And there's two groups of people that are observing here. There's two different diametrically opposed statements here. And just because I love you, I love we, us, you get to answer the same question today. There's two groups of people. Here's what I see in the response to God loving by weeping. And they saw Jesus crying and they made this determination. Here's the first group. Verse 36, it says some of the Jews that were there, they said, see how he loved him. You see that? They watched and they saw that Jesus was there, that he was weeping, that he was engaged. And they said, look it, he loves. You see that? Here's what the second group says. The second group, observing the exact same thing, says, but some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind bring this man or save him from death? Couldn't he keep him from dying? Oh boy, here we go, okay? What eyes do you see with? Because some people see what God does in the midst of tragedy and they go, unbelievable the love of God that he has. Jesus is here. He's weeping. He's there. He's offering. Look at how much he loves Lazarus. He loves him. He loves him. He loves him. And he let him die. And other people, me sometimes, maybe you sometimes, maybe you right now, are like, look at how God didn't do enough again. I thought he healed blind people. Why didn't he save him? Why'd he wait? Why didn't he show up? He could have. Here we go. It's the same thing. Do you see the two different responses in the exact same verse? Some people are like, oh my gosh, I see what he, I'm choosing to see what he does in the middle of it. And it's hard and it's brutal and it's painful and it's unfortunate and there's death and it's difficult and there's questioning and there's all the things, but he loves, look what he's doing. There's more going on than I see. And then there's the other side of us. It's like, here he is again, not here, not saving, not loving, not helpful, not avoiding, not doing enough. I thought, and if he, oh, here I am, I hate it. But it's so good to go, yeah, I can be that way. What eyes do you see with? Can you see the fact that God is loving and offers and is in it? Or can we choose to see, which he will let you, all the times when he's not? Not on time, he's late, didn't save it, didn't change it. God offers life, but it's not always in the way that we see it. Last one, second to last one. Gosh, last one. It's a funny one, okay? Just real quick. He's like, hey, we gotta go in the tomb. Martha's like, hey, be careful. He's been in there for 4 days. There's a bit of an odor. Why? Dead, right? Waited 4 days, dead. Who rings King James? Anybody ring King James in here? Read King James version here. Okay, what does it say in the King James? He stinketh. That's all, that's the point, that's it. That's just observation, right? In the King James, that's the language, say, he stinketh. He stinketh because he deadeth in there, right? Don't forget who God is. God is a God of love, and he's creator, and he's sustainer, and he's sovereign, all those things. God's also funny and brings life and joy and celebration. Every facet of life is from God. Don't forget that. Even in the story of tragedy and difficulty right now, he stinketh, okay? It's fun. See that. Love God for who he is, a person. He wants to be in relationship with you. He's not this big, massive judge that wants to crush and is evil and absent all the time. Don't believe that. It's not in the text. Okay, he stinketh. Here's the last part, and then we're done. Jesus says, Lazarus, come out. Lazarus, come out. Said the dead man came out. Find it interesting that even though Jesus just raised Lazarus from the dead, he comes out, he walks out, he's still what? The what man came out? Dead man. Again, interesting part of the text that you should not miss. He was dead. Now he came out dead. It says the dead man is out. Then what happens? He says, the dead man came out. His hands and feet were wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Okay, as we end this message for today, the one part of the story that we all like is when Lazarus is brought back to life. Jesus offers the invitation, says, come out, and he does. But he's dead until when? I heard it. Until you take off your death clothes. Such a rich part of the story to where some of us have been offered the invitation of life. And again, this is part two next week. Hopefully you're like, gotta be here for this, because you do. Because we're gonna talk about what that means. But God offers us a resurrection from the life that we have, spiritually and emotionally and physically. And he says, I offer for you to get up, resurrect, stand up again. But here's what I'm offering, but you have to do it. You have to take off your death clothes. You gotta leave them in the tomb. You gotta let the old be there. You gotta do something new. You gotta walk in life. You gotta walk in what's new. You gotta be a new person. You gotta be a new creation. That's what baptism is. That's what new life is. That's what resurrection is. It's something that's dead, but you have got to take off your death clothes, and some of us don't want to. Some of us would rather stay in the grave. Don't trust it. Don't believe it. I'd rather have a life that stinketh. And that's a little subtle, like not so funny laugh, and I know why. Because some of us really like the idea of gravity, really like this idea of a resurrected life, but you will not take a hold of it. It is there for you, but you'd rather put on every single day your death clothes and remind yourself of how you're dead, remind yourself of how you failed, remind yourself of how bad it was, remind yourself that God wasn't there, remind yourself of all the things that the enemy wants to tell you about, how all the stuff. Some of us, like, every single day. New Testament, Paul says, put on the armor. He says, put on new life. Put on the newness that God offers. Every single day you get the choice to come on up out of that grave or not. Would you today be invited to next week to hear more about it, but would you take off your dead clothes? Take off what's old, accept what's new, walk in the way and the truth and the life that is Jesus, that is what life is about, which is what eternal life is. Life always, not then, now and then. The offer is for you, that's the gospel. But you gotta take off your stinketh dead life. Guess what you're gonna need to do that? Faith and trust in other people. That's what the church is. Nothing else. But guess what? We're gonna be like Thomas. We're gonna mess it up. We're screwed up, say dumb things, have to get back on the path. That's what it means to follow the way and be a part of life. I hope you want that. That's what I want.
We want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. Our mission at Real Life is to reach the world for Jesus one person at a time. If you'd like more info on the ministry or a giving opportunity, be sure to download the RLM app or visit us online at reallifeministries.com.